we'll be able to relate the name.
Okay.
On Raleigh James Talk Show, someone had called in and asked you about the state buying off witnesses' testimonies.
Yes.
Okay. And you gave Bill, you asked for 4 minutes of time, and she gave you five, to expound on who killed Alan Bill. If you would, Mr. Lane, for us tonight, I would like to get your side of the story. For the last 2 years, the media has perpetrated you as scum of the earth, Lord of the snakes, belly. They perpetrated you as a very rotten person. I don't know, myself, I know of no one who's given you the opportunity to give your side of the Alan Berg murder story. You gave 5 minutes of it on Raleigh James' talk show, quickly. What I'd like for you to do for me tonight, if you would, is to briefly, maybe take 5 or 10 minutes to reverberate what you said on her show, and then I would like to go into detail to be able to hit points of that, if you would.
You mean basically what I talked about, what was in the transcripts of the trial?
You talked about how Randall Rader had been paid $87,000 for his testimony.
Yes.
He had admitted to first-degree murder.
Yes.
Okay, you had talked about he and a man by the name of Robert Murky.
Yes.
Who had were involved in the Ellenberg murder.
Yes.
From what I understand, you are taking a not guilty. Pierce is taking a not guilty.
Almost.
Okay. The jury found Scutari and Gene Craig not guilty.
Correct.
But yourself, David Lane, and Bruce Pierce guilty. But you're saying you were not involved, is that right? Okay. The testimony you gave on Raleigh James' talk show was you explained this, how it happened, your side of it.
Right.
That's what I'd like you to do for me tonight.
Okay. Can I put the whole thing in the context of the struggle between myself and what I call the system that has gone on for a long time?
If you can do it briefly, I'd like to just take no more than maybe 10 minutes in the beginning to reverberate this.
Okay.
Go over it.
It is getting into taking what can be taken. First of all, 100% of everything I will tell you about Randall Rader is sworn testimony of his, except one item which was sworn to by his best friend, Jackie Norton. That's who you were thinking of from Arkansas, Jackie Norton. He swore sworn testimony that he purchased the gun that killed Alan Berg. He swore his own sworn testimony that he drilled the numbers off of the gun. Randall Rader's own sworn testimony is that he turned the gun into a fully automatic weapon.
Randall Rader,
his own sworn testimony that he did this himself.
Mm-hmm.
And his own sworn testimony is that he built a silencer for this machine gun. And as I said on the Raleigh James show, you don't build a silencer for a machine gun unless you're trying to kill somebody. There's no other, you don't go deer hunting with a semi-automatic, I mean with a fully automatic 45 caliber machine gun. He swore in his own testimony that he gave the gun to the hit team going to Denver to kill the Jewish talk show host.
Now, who are you saying was a member of that hit team?
He swore that it was Robert Matthews and Richard Scutari.
Okay.
Now, his testimony was that I told him the day they left that this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had never met Randall Rader. I was living in Boise and never met the man. So this was totally impossible to start with. But by his own sworn testimony, he knew it was going to happen and that he could have stopped it by picking up the phone and calling the Denver police.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my understanding of Colorado law is that if you supply the weapon, you arrange the details, such as putting a silencer on the gun, you have previous knowledge, you can stop the crime, that you're guilty of the crime.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, by his own sworn testimony, District Attorney Early does not have to go out and do like the government and create an eye of a bunch of perjured witnesses. He's got one that swore to it right on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
And he can bring you back here and put you in the gas chamber for the murder of Alan Berg. But
no, what do you mean he could put him in the gas chamber for it? He knew it was going to take place.
Yes. And he bought the gun, he built the silencer, he had previous knowledge, and according to his testimony, he had knowledge of it afterwards and covered it up.
Do you believe at the time he was doing this that he knew what he was doing?
Well, that's the way his testimony is. I'm just going by the transcripts. I can't swear to it. When I tie Murphy into it, there's indications that maybe Randall Rader had been in some type of employ at the Federals from before he joined the Union. But from just strictly from the transcripts of Rader, you can't prove that.
You can't.
Where did Robert Murphy fit into all this?
Well, all the coincidences of Robert Murphy are really strange. He came from the same town as Mr. Berg in Chicago.
Alan Berg.
And Mr. Murphy told myself, Mr. Matthews, Mr. Terry, that he had worked as a hired killer or hitman for the Chicago Mafia, as well as for the CIA.
So you knew Robert Murphy personally?
Yes.
How well did you know him?
Well, I didn't even know his real name. I thought his name was Perry Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know him well, but I had stayed at his house in Boise when I lived down there. He had completely deceived me. I thought his name was something else. And among the things he did, first of all, he told us that he had been arrested for counterfeiting in 1981 in Oregon, and that he had gone to Central America to hide out from the feds. Now, while he was in Central America, and this is by his own sworn testimony, he was working with a man named Ward Davis, who, according to his publications, was involved in supplying the hunters, which is a CIA activity. Then, the next year, even though he said that he went to Central America to hide out from the feds, he shows back up in Colorado, and he's attending public meetings at the La Porte Church of Christ and at the home of a man named Schubert, who's having his public meetings with really far-right-wing groups.
Now, why would he attend a church? Why would he attend a church like the La Porte Church of Christ?
Well, the La Porte Church of Christ is an identity Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, they are very much in conflict with the official policies of the United States government, which are, you may quarrel if you like, but to integrate, mix, and destroy the race of the founding fathers. And the identity Christian faith opposes this.
Mm-hmm.
So they are in opposition to the government. So my suspicion is that indeed, and all the indications are, that he was not hiding from the feds, that he was, in fact, monitoring. Yes. I think that indication is, first of all, why wasn't he in jail for counterfeiting? He says it was a low bail, but that's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he return from Central America? He's hiding there from the feds. Why does he go to public meetings where he's the most apt to be seen? And then to top it all off, according to the various 302s, and 302 is a statement given to the FBI that the defense can get on a disclosure. And according to all these different statements that he made, he was worried about his fingerprints being on the gun. He said he gave a MAC-10, which is the kind of gun that killed Alan Berg, to a man named Gary Yarbrough.
Murphy said that.
Yes. Now, later he says, and he also says, as far as he knows, there was only one MAC-10 in the order. And I believe Benjamin Parmer said this also. Later he says, no, he gave the gun to Gary Yarbrough after Yarbrough's house was raided and the gun was found. But there's no other MAC-10 discovered. He says he gave it to him to training camp. There was no MAC-10 discovered there. He would not have been worried about his fingerprints on the murder weapon if it had already been picked up. If it was a gun that he'd given way after it had been picked up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He then proceeds to tell the FBI that Gary Yarbrough was on the hit team that killed Alan Berg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, strange thing is...
Were Yarbrough and Murphy in fellowship with each other at this time? Did they know each other? Or do you know?
Yeah, they were in close fellowship, but they knew each other. They had met at Boise once or twice.
And was Murphy a member of the order?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Murphy was this expert, as I told you about on the Roddy King show, in every CIA activity. He printed all the false certificates and created false driver's licenses from foreign countries, which is CIA-type activity. He was an expert in weapons and silencers and poisons and everything you could think of. It was a spy-type activity. He testified that he had a MAC-10 in his hand, and he changed his story. He said he thought it was the murderer. I contend he knew very well.
When was this?
This was in his testimony, sadly.
When was it, though, that he was saying he had it in his hand?
Before he gave it to Gary Yarbrough. I can't give you the exact dates, but before he gave his weapon to Gary Yarbrough, and he thought it was the murder weapon.
Mm-hmm.
If he's such a complete expert in spy stuff, why didn't he alter the ballistics or get rid of the gun? He's holding a gun to play with the gas chamber. But he gives it to Gary Yarbrough, and very conveniently, Gary Yarbrough was raided by the feds, and the weapon's found.
Do you know the time in between here from the time he gave it to Gary Yarbrough, the time the feds raided his place? Do you know the timing in there?
I don't know. See, that's where they're... First of all, he said he gave it to Gary Yarbrough, then he says after the raid on Gary Yarbrough's house. But they still raided his fingerprints on it. So the whole timing there, the whole story is fishy. I can't put it together. But why was he worried about his fingerprints?
Now, he said it in testimony.
No, this was his statements to the FBI, I believe. Part of it's in testimony and part of it's his statements to the FBI.
How did you get his statements to the FBI?
From disclosure. When you go to trial, the attorneys file for disclosure and they get a certain amount of the information people told them.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Then the strange thing is, then after this convenient raid on Gary's house where the weapon is found, the ballistics intact, they come up with a witness putting Gary Yarbrough on the scene in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
You may remember this witness testified, and they showed the tape.
I remember that some gal that was a neighbor of Amber said she thought she saw Gary Yarbrough,
right,
driving a van.
I believe that was another one. This lady that testified said that she saw him running past her house
Okay. The
evening that Amber was killed. And this is after Mr. Murky says that Gary Yarbrough was on the hit team. That's another thing that's in the disclosure material. He told the FBI that Gary Yarbrough was on the hit team. Well, it all kind of messed up and came apart for him because Gary Yarbrough was at his wife's bedside, or one of his child's bedside. He was getting a kidney transplant or some such thing in Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
So it all came apart. I am guessing the way it looks that Mr. Pierce was supposed to have a gun planted on him. Mr. Pierce had been arranged for him to be in Denver, and a shell case.
Mr. Pierce had arranged for who to be in Denver?
Somebody had arranged, apparently Mr. Matthews, or somebody had arranged for Mr. Pierce to be in Denver. Mr. Scuteri, who had just joined the order, he didn't even know anybody, was in Denver with Mr. Pierce to do what he did, which was lie detector test on prospective recruits.
For the order.
For the order.
Okay.
It's so packed that they are put on the scene in the city, and then the...
And you're saying Bruce Pierce and Richard Scutari were put in Denver at the time that Allenberg was killed?
Or 2 days before.
Okay. By these particular people who were trying to set these men up.
That's the appearance from the transcripts.
Okay. You don't know that as fact.
No, I do not.
You're just putting it together from transcripts. Okay.
And think what would happen if Mr. Murky had put that weapon in Mr. Pierce's hands. Mr. Pierce and Gary Yarbrough were gun nuts. The two gun nuts in the order. Ones wanted to collect them, have them, have all kinds of stuff. And when they were captured, they had stacks of it. If he had put the gun in Mr. Pierce's hands and the shell casing was conveniently found in Mr. Pierce's house, think of what would happen. But I think he did the wrong thing. I think Mr. Murphy had a drinking problem. That may be why he's crying out in a SCI now. I've just put this together from transcripts.
Okay, you're putting what you're saying then is something that you don't know as fact. All you know that you're saying is that Allenberg was murdered, that you have been convicted of that murder, you and Bruce Pierce, You're saying you did not do it. Where were you at the time of the murder? Maybe you've left been right out in some transcripts.
I don't know. I would say maybe Boise. Shortly after that time, I went to Philadelphia to visit my sister and brother-in-law. When I was back in Boise, about late July, I got some clippings or something that told me that the Denver police wanted to question me about the affair. That time I sent a letter to the Denver media, accusing them of once again slandering me.
I guess I find it strange that for you to, you know, I know that you want people to believe that you're innocent. But there was a particular date that this man was murdered. I would think that you would really be able to rack or find someone to be able to give you an alibi, to be able to find, to say, well, David Lane was, you know, Idaho, whatever, is a long ways from Denver, Colorado.
Well, I wish Murky would, but you got to understand, contrary to what the government tried to say, that Mr. Berg was an obsession. I talked to him twice, I believe, on the radio. Probably more moving than anything else. He was never on my mind.
Did you feel hate for Alan Berg?
No emotion whatsoever. Neither way whatsoever. Kind of comical. If you had listened to the tape, he was the one that was hating. He was the one that yelled and screamed. I thought it was comical. I guess that's the only word. But he was not an obsession. I had no reason to think about him alive or dead. And I was traveling the country constantly, meeting...
What were you traveling for the order?
Yes, for...
recruiting?
Well, Mr. Matthews had made me more or less, because I know so many people, and right wing a liaison with various groups. The Farmers Liberation Army, and some people I met in Scottsbluff, and some people down with an identity broadcast for being Canadian in western Kansas. And people on the East Coast, and I just traveled constantly. That's all I did through the order for those several months.
So during that period of time, you're saying because you were traveling so much that you really didn't know exactly. There was no one during this period of time that could have said, well, you were at such and such place at such and such time?
There is a gentleman who believes I was in his area at the time it happened and would have come to testify to it even, but I don't want him getting the same thing happen to him that happened to me. I'm already in for 40 years and I'm not going to. I didn't call hardly any witnesses. I had a young lady, a lady friend named Kathy Kilty, who lived in Wisconsin, who could have testified to the fact that I was. That Mr. Martinez and Mr. Loth both lied about my presence in Philadelphia and in Meadow Lane Falls when they said Mr. Lane was there and he said he wanted to kill Alan Berg. Mm-hmm. And she could have testified that was a lie because I was visiting her at her house at that time. Mm-hmm. And quite conveniently, she got run over by a truck and killed last summer before this trial was brought up. Another strange thing is that after I refused to make a deal and work for the feds in this whole operation of theirs, sedition charges and various other things.
What do you mean make a deal? What kind of deal were they trying to make with you?
Well, they had come to Mr. Scuteri and the heat in which you directed, most, to me, they were quite as blatant about it. Mr. Scuteri, he said he knew nothing about this crime or any other the crimes they wanted him to talk about. And he said, I know nothing. And they said, don't worry. We'll give you facts, names, dates, and places. And you go to work for us or you go to prison. And he told, this was after he stayed in prison. This was after he was in Memphis. He told me he did not lie for it, that he knew nothing. And they immediately put him in the hole and transferred him to a higher security institution the next day. This was when he was in Memphis and they transferred him to Leavenworth. After I refused what they said, the words that my lawyer said to me, if you can make yourself, I don't use curse words regardless of what they said. He was saying, you can make yourself legal deal. And I said I didn't do anything. I wouldn't betray Commerce if I did. And they took me from Boise and put me in a team that was all blacks in Seattle. They kept me awake for about 4 months. They put...
They? Who are they? Who are you saying? Are they doing... Who's doing...
Well, the feds decide where you go, what jail you go to. All the rest of the Boosh Fighting Rebellion were put in suburban jails in Tacoma, Everett, Washington.
So the feds are going in and controlling, like, this detention center and telling, like, this lieutenant to do this and to do that?
I don't know about this one. They do it still in
Seattle. No, but I'm saying that... You're saying that's what they did to you in Seattle.
That's what they did in Seattle. And they proceeded to put me in this tier that was... At first, it was all blacks. Again, eventually, they did put a nice young white man in there who came, eventually, and shared a cell with me. But for the first 2-3 months, they would, they kept me awake constantly. They would scream all night long about their terminology is really gross, you know, things about. So they call, apparently, in the gallows, is a status symbol to be a pimp and to have white boards. And their terminology they use is, I have so many bitches working hostro. Excuse my French. And hostro apparently means the place where the whores walk or something along this line. So they would scream to me all night long about the things that they did to white women and so on. They tried to stab me with mop handles whenever I tried to get in my bunk. They would urinate in mop buckets of dirty water and throw it on me. And if the if friendly guards came around, I'd have to clean up. If not, I could stand there in the puddles and wet. And this went on for 2 or 3 months until I just nearly dead.
And you're saying they did this because you wouldn't cooperate with them?
I assume.
Why was it so important for them that you cooperate with them?
They have to break what is happening in this country. This government is essentially no more than a program to destroy the last remnants of Western man.
Well, what
is a... We were the first physical resistance, and they have to squash it no matter what kind of tyranny they are.
Okay, what kind of physical resistance were you doing that they were so upset about, that they were decided they're going to come get Brett, David Lang and Bruce Pierce and, you know, take care of you? What is it that you were doing?
Well, I'm not going to implicate it. You know, I know things that are done that violate the laws of Caesar. And I'm not going to say, I'm not going to sit here and implicate
yourself?
Members of the resistance. Well, I don't care now. They gave me 40 years. They came down here and they'll give me life and they're going to drag me off and try me for sedition or what's over the government. Give me another 20 and they may never stop.
Can you stop this movie, Jesse?
I'm saying, you're trying to tell me and other people that you knew something or you were doing something that was so upsetting to our government that they come after you. Not only did they come after you, but now they're punishing you, they're harassing you for something you've done or you knew or whatever. You see, to people who are listening to this show or to who are going to be listening to this videotape, that seems preposterous.
True.
Why would our government do that? You're one man, you're four people. Why would they do that?
I'm not one man, and it's not one individual they punish. For instance, this book right here, I believe, is the most dangerous thing to the tyranny that has overtaken our nation that's ever been published. I've written volumes and volumes, which when I write something, it is published, first of all, by a few thousand people. I mean, it goes out immediately to a few thousand people. It then reaches others, that we have 5,000 underground publications in the United States today. And it reaches this one, and they republish it, and they publish it, and they publish it. And pretty soon, at least hundreds of thousands, if not several million people, are aware of what I'm teaching.
Well, if the government is so against you and what you're teaching, why are they allowing these publications to get out of the prisons?
They are hoisted upon their own petard, so to speak. You have to understand the last days of democracy, for one thing. A system of government which our forefathers just despised and were very worried that their republic would turn into a democracy. But it does divide into a group of factions. It is madly competing factions. That's the end of every democracy. All public, all demanding their little bit from the public till and destroying an ever-shrinking group of producers until the whole thing just explodes. If people would read Plato's Republic from 2,500 years ago, they would understand why the founding fathers believed democracy was the most evil form of government and why they were so worried about it. And they would understand what is happening in America today. Now, there are little fraction of groups. I sit and when I go to jail or prison, maybe 50% or 60 or 70% of the guards hate me, and 30% love me. That's a...
They would hate you because they've heard about you, or...
They've heard about me. They know that I threaten the power structure, that my teachings do. That's just the way it is.
Let's go back a minute. Back to the trial you just got through. You haven't been sentenced yet, have you?
No.
Do you have any idea when that sentencing will be and what your sentencing will be?
I think it's Thursday.
This coming Thursday?
Yes.
Do you have... You probably haven't a win coin.
I
you could get life in prison.
I assume, right? Yeah, I'll get life.
You assume that.
Okay.
Are you going to appeal?
I don't know what the lawyers are going to do. What's the matter? They gave me 40 years. They're giving me life. They're giving me another 20 on a sedition trial. I was 47 years old, a model citizen, sold real estate in this town. Other than one incident as a youth, which I'm not proud of, I've never had a scrape with the law. A model citizen, and they're going to just punish and punish and punish. They have to bring me, because I'm talking an idea whose time has come. And I'm going to preserve the existence of Western man.
Not Western white man?
The white man is Western man. The every improvement, or at least 99.99% of all improvements in the human condition have come from young kindred people. And anybody that points out this fact is utterly destroyed by the media and government. They're called haters, bigots, racists, all of the buzzwords, but in fact, the guilt of those who partake in destroying Western man, white man, cannot be calculated in the vocabulary of mortals. And the mind control is so immense that people don't even know what's going on. When the media speaks of minorities, maybe 8% of the world is white. And they have no nations of their own. Their hegemony is destroyed. They are denied the territorial imperative, which is necessary to the existence of any people. And yet the media calls them injured.
Are you a Christian? You claim to be a Christian.
I will accept a designation of Christian and be proud of it in the understanding of our founding fathers in 200 years ago. That which today is called the Christian Church, which practices usury, say nothing condoning it, they practice it, which condones, in many cases, abortion. Throughout history, infanticide, which is now called abortion, has been a symbol and a sign of a decaying and dying, a perverted nation.
What you're saying is that you are really not a Christian, as the basic Christian fundamentalist world says Christian. Are you a Christian when it says, do you believe that Jesus Christ was the Son of God, and
no.
He'll come back and reign as King? You
no.
don't?
Yeshua.
Yeshua.
There is. You have to understand that the man or God who walked in Galilee 2,000 years ago was called Yeshua. That's the Arabic name. That's what his apostles called him. When the name was transferred to the Latin, it became Christus. And even today, in Latin Mass, you're called Christus. That then was translated into English as Christ. Now, in the 4th century, when the Roman religion was created, the name Jesus was added. If you go to a Latin Mass, if you hear the name in Spanish, Any other way you'll find Jesus Christus. It's actually spelled I-E, Zeus. And it means the same as Zeus. And Zeus was the primary god of Greece for 1300 years before the creation of the Roman religion in the 4th century. So, using the name Jesus is, I have troubles with it. On one hand, I believe that the Creator will be himself, no matter what names men use to describe it. Whether you call him Christus or Christ or Yeshua or Yahweh or Yahweh or whatever the name. I do have a little difficulty with calling Zeus.
You're Yahweh or you're Yahshua or whatever.
Yes.
You have a belief in him.
Yes.
You believe that he was the Son of God.
Yes.
You walked. You believe he's coming back to reign as king.
There will be no rapture. That is a false
king. Okay, I'm not saying rapture. I'm saying Yahshua coming back and reigning as king. Where does he fit in with your belief? Where does he fit in with this white man?
Once again, I go back to your life law, and you go back to such basics you have to understand. Man has been perverting the word for several millennia. And that's the reason I teach, if I might just give you the first paragraph out of this book. Until mankind realizes there's only one source from which he can ascertain pure, certain, and eternal truths, there will never be peace or stability on this earth. In the eternal natural laws of nature and nature's God are the keys to life, order, and understanding. The words of men, even those who may have been divinely inspired, are subject to the translations, vocabulary, additions, subtractions, and even deliberate distortions of imperfect, infallible mortals. Therefore, every writing or influence, be it ancient or modern, must be constantly strained to the test of conformity to the Creator's perfect natural law. Now, I'll just give you a quick, for instance, the King James Bible, published as it was 3,800 and some years ago, has many, many changes which destroy the meaning today. For instance, the words Judah, Judai, and Judean were lumped together in one shorter word, which destroys the message of Yahshua when he said in his 10th and 15th chapters of Matthew, I come only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And again he says to his apostles, go not to any but the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now the modern preacher who destroyed his flock tells you that he will spiritualize that. But the fact of the matter, the entire Bible, from Genesis to Revelations, is written to a people called Israel.
And who is Israel?
Well, that's a very... Let's first go to who is not. If you'll go to the 10th chapter, if you go to the 7th chapter, the 8th chapter, and the 10th chapters of John, you will find Christ states specifically who are his enemies and who are Israel. In the 10th chapter of John, I believe it's the 24th verse, he states, it's verse 10 of 4, let's see. And then came the Jews around about him and said unto him, how long dost thou makest to doubt? If thou be the Christ, tell us plainly. And Jesus answered them, I told you, and ye believe not. The works that I do in my Father's name, they bear witness of me, but ye believe me not, because ye are not of my sheep, as I said unto you. As I quoted you twice in Matthew, he said, somebody's a sheep, and that's all he came to. Now he says, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. Now it's not real hard from history to find out what race of people have printed every Bible. I've done 99% of missionary work, have kept the gospel alive for 2,000 years. It's not hard to find that the disciples went to Greece and to Rome, all over Italy, Asia Minor, which 2,000 years ago were strictly Nordic, nothing else. James went to Spain, Paul went to Spain, Joseph of Arimathea came from England. The first Christian church ever built was a Glastonbury. The book says of Israel.
Okay. I see, basically the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Germanic, and kindred people.
There can be no other. If you believe this book means anything, there's no other answer.
Okay. Let's go back, if we may, David. There's a couple of questions that I had left concerning your trial. I found it interesting that there was only one day of defense.
Yes.
Why?
Well, my lawyer refused to call defense witnesses.
Did you have witnesses to call that your lawyer did not want to call?
Well, I could have called dozens of witnesses. One to prove that... Well, there are lots of things I wanted to do. Number one, I wanted him to say to the jury, look, Bob Matthews, according to all the testimony, sent Gene Craig to Denver to do this research and find out where the bird lived or something. I was a title insurance employee, a real estate broker. I drove a taxi here when I went to college. I could have done everything that Gene did in minutes with no exposure. I wouldn't have had to rent a motel room, leave my name. Everything that she did in minutes. So why would Bob Matthews send Gene Craig unless I was to have no knowledge or would have vetoed the idea if I knew anything about it?
So you're saying Bob Matthews was involved within this conspiracy also? With Murphy and...
I'm saying that's what the transcripts show, and that's what the testimony shows.
Why would your lawyer, when he's supposed to be defending you, why would he not defend you like you want him to?
I don't think there's a lawyer in the country that would defend me. I don't think they'd keep their license.
Did you try and be your own pro se litigate?
I said to the judge at the beginning of the trial that I had a problem with my lawyer's ethnicity and that I didn't need him to work. He was not receptive and kind of an attitude that they're going to do what they're going to do, and I'm not going to beg. I considered defending myself, but technicality and I felt the court were impossible. So if I was really in a situation, do what you're going to do. And I did fight with him from day one, not presenting a defense, and he just wouldn't do it. So,
what about the other lawyers? The other three? Your lawyer was Jewish, is that correct?
I read
that from a Jewish journal.
Yes.
Okay, what about the other three defendants' attorneys? Were they Jewish?
One was.
Which one?
Mr. Katz.
Was Gene Craig's?
Yes.
Okay. The other two weren't.
Yeah, Gene Craig's not considered an enemy. She's a harmless, little grandmother. You know, she's not. The state did not consider her at all. In fact, it opponent or an injury.
Scutari must not be either then, because he was found innocent.
Scutari probably is, to a certain extent, he's much more dangerous than she is. Scutari's lawyer did the finest job I've ever seen a lawyer do. Just amazing. And then there was also the problem with they were not able to force any effective witnesses to lie and say that he was anti-Semitic. And the way the statute is written, that was part of what had to be proved.
Mm-hmm. Right, in order to prove the violation of the civil rights.
Right.
Just recently, I believe it was in last week's Rocky Mountain News, Saul Rosenthal from the ADL made a statement that because of your conviction and Bruce Pierce's conviction, all of these white supremacist people now are on the run, and he's putting them basically in holes, and they've really got you all scared. What's your comment to that?
There's been 1,800 of these purchased in the last week.
1,800 purchased? How do people know how to purchase them?
We have a huge underground network. It's immense. People don't have any idea what's going on in this country. There's been no free speech allowed in this country for 70 years, and there's been a huge network built. Let me give you an example. A man named, publishing under the name of Yuli Lawrence, who was, his real name was Francis Parker Yockey, was the chief prosecutor for Wayne County, Indiana in 1945. And he was one of the few Gentiles who was born in Nuremberg, and came to realize as people, and there was all this lies going on. And he tried to stand up for some type of justice to these Germans. And he was kicked off the tribunals. So he went to Ireland and published a book called Imperium, which talked about the death of Western man, what was going on. He was unable to publish the book, although it's one of the great books of all history. It was comparable to anything that Nietzsche wrote. And he was not allowed back in the United States. he managed to raise enough funds in Ireland to get the book, 300 copies of the book published. And eventually he snuck back into the United States. He was thrown into jail in San Francisco and immediately found dead within a few days. There are literally thousands of immense books, like Which Way Was the Man, and Perry, and so on, which have pointed out what causes the death of civilizations, whether it be immorality such as homosexuality and the abortion thing, and, but maybe the mix of destruction of the great man, the writer who makes and forms civilizations. None of them have been published. Anybody that attempts to speak is utterly destroyed socially, economically, and if he continues to speak, he will be destroyed physically in one way or the other, either in prison or killed.
So are you saying that what his followers and follow is saying is probably true in an extent, that what people such as yourself are having to go underground rather than being able to come out and really speak, have freedom of speech in this country?
They have driven more and more underground. The white man is totally disenfranchised. And as more and more of them realize it, and more of them will not sell their soul to the system that destroys their people and the future of their children, more and more go underground. It's the nature of democracy. It's the nature of the insanity of a so-called multiracial society. I filed a motion June 17th in this court that you should have read. I have a copy in there. At least it's in one of the Arab Nation's publications. But I pointed out that when you deny a people freedom of association, such as forced baptism, you say you may not associate with your own kind. When you deny them freedom of association in your own neighborhoods, you deny them their own existence. When you deny them a job, right? From a job comes food, housing, clothing, wife, children. You effectively commit genocide. And the white man is totally disenfranchised. Furthermore, through the power of the media and so on, he may have no hegemony. He may have no culture to promote his own. He may have a black America and a mixed America. He may have a Hispanic caucus, a black caucus. He may have thousands of organizations pushing the culture of every race. But the white man, he has denied any country of his own. He has denied hegemony over the smallest political unit. He has denied any territorial imperative necessary for its survival as a physical race and a culture.
So you believe that America would be better off if we took these other races and separated them and each have their own little communities, their own states, and not intermingle, not segregated everybody, we segregated them and everybody stayed in their own?
It's a simple fact that no race of people can exist without a nation of their own, must propagate to mankind, to promote their own kind, and to protect their own kind. All history declares it. You cannot exist without it. Now, we have reached, due to the efforts of very evil men, pointing this nation where separation would be terrible hardship. And as a solution, rather than the bloodbath that will come when there are not enough of us to support them, or whatever happens. And because, contrary to what is taught, I do not hate others because I wish to preserve my own. There is still a way, if it were possible, to get back some control of the media. The natural instincts are to go your own. The preservation of every race and species is through these instincts, which are instilled by God and nature, to preserve your own kind. I go to nature for many examples because they do carry over to man, because those laws of God, the Creator, are perfect.
Did you write this down?
Yes. Whether you believe, as I believe, in a divine causation, or simply some happenstance, the laws are equally perfect. In nature, you will find that there are many families, such as in mankind, who can even breed. They are the same general family. be they polar bears, which are white, or black bears, or brown bears. And yet, in their natural state, they will not, because the Creator put a certain instinct.
Stay separate each. Each in your own.
It is an antipathy between each in order to preserve the individuality, the duty, and the existence of each, each one. He did the same with mankind, but you can destroy it. Just as you can if you put a brown bear and a black bear together and force them together and the female comes and eats, you could destroy that seed line. As if you did it to all, you can do it. You do the same as foxes and wolves and coyotes. Simply because they can breed together does not mean they are supposed to breed together. They will pursue their own methods of maintaining their individuality and existence. Part of this, in order to maintain this, was called a territorial imperative. That is the place, you know, a male sets out the circle and this belongs to him. There's no conflict when the territorial imperative is intact. When the wolf has his, and the fox has his, and the coyote has his, there's no conflict. There's no conflict between the black male, the white male, and the Hispanic male, the Aztec male, when they each have their own territory. The nature's laws, God's laws, say that you as a male will not fight to keep your females, then your species will perish. And that's just as true for the races of men as any other. There is no conflict between this black man and this white man and this Hispanic when they're in their own territorial imperative. When they're in mine, and they are destroying my culture, my race.
The day that I was in trial, I thought it was very sad with his ex-wife testifying against him and he had to leave the courtroom.
Yeah.
Let's just say that you're innocent of the murder in Allen Berg. What can people do to help you?
My fate is tied to the preservation of my people. If people work to preserve the civilization and raise them in front of it, perhaps someday I'll succeed. But my personal circumstances compared to the death of this race, what will come from studying history to the last generation of my children, my personal circumstances just aren't important. See, I hurt and get scared.
Scared of what? What your future holds?
I'm afraid of death. I'm afraid of, you know, I'm stuck in a situation where 90 years depends on the population is not right. We've been taught that it's not that I was to preserve my own kind or my own civilization, but every time the media gets on and says those 4 million South Africans are evil because they went mixed with 600 million black Africans and disappears of race and culture overnight. They get the glass all over the place and some white people get stabbed in the prison system. It's true. I'm not a brave man, I'm a philosopher. But I will not. I cannot acquiesce in the deliberate destruction of my race, Western man, and Western civilization.
Well, I really appreciate you giving us this interview. I feel like you've answered some questions that I've had in my mind. One, real briefly, before we get to Lieutenant Meredith. Robert Murky, did he have a family?
Well, he was married to a lady that had children.
Well, from what I understand, he and his wife during the racketeering charges or whatever had gotten 30 years. And if they were CIA and plant, why would they get prison terms?
Well, first of all, I think he did some violent things because he was drinking heavily. The second thing you have to understand is that I believe all the government witnesses, and I can check on him, got what they call B2 members.
B2 number with that?
The government terms them loose any time they want. Others have to go through procedures and they never Technically, in 10 years, I can have a parole here. Of course, we don't get it. They give themselves a credit and keep me. If you get a B2 number, as soon as they use you, they turn you loose. That's what they did to Denver Primary, for instance. They've been using him to testify, 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 and his deal was that if he got a conviction by his testimony here, he could get out May of next year, despite all the crimes and forming the order and everything else, because the sentence was under what you call a B2 number. And sure, as soon as Robert Murphy is completely used up, as soon as they had him testify at the sedition trial and the Seattle trial and the Denver trial and all the rest of the trials, promotion. That's what all of them did.
Friend Ray Arce also?
He's already free.
He's already free.
He's free and gone $1,750 a month from the government. Randy Rader is guilty of sin and first-degree murder, to say nothing of burning down churches.
What churches?
He burned down some church because it was his testimony. He burned down some church in Arkansas, Missouri. And he was the purchaser of hundreds of fully automatic weapons and illegal activities. Randy Rader could be in prison for beginning of thousands of years from the federal government. So you just can't think of a bigger criminal and crook than he's free.
Have you had any visitors since you've been in here?
I've not permitted visitors other than my adopted parents came and we don't get along, so that was something like that. But,
you can't have any other visitors?
I don't.
Just people who want to come in and wrap your brain?
No, just media. That they can't come out of media access, apparently. But nobody else. I'm not permitted.
Do you know why that is? Why aren't you allowed when other prisoners are allowed?
I guess.
You're more wicked, or?
I guess we're terribly wicked. I'm not permitted contact visits even in the federal prison system. Everybody else can have their girl come and be my hug or something. I'm not allowed to touch another human being. That's.
Bruce Pierce also?
No, he can have contact visits. I'm the only one. I'm the only one that's rejected to it at Seattle. I'm the only one that's in what they call Marion, which is nothing like it exists in the Western world. You're locked in your cell all the time, 23 hours a day. You got 1 hour a day to take a shower. Before you come out of the shower, you have to put your hands out to the food hole and be handcuffed behind you. They open the door, and one big thug reaches in and grabs you. Two more period months, it's this long steel ball sticking out of the end. Walk beside you, and you just wiggle the wrong way. They jam this steel ball between your ribs and separate your ribs. There's nothing like it in Western Europe. There's nothing like it in Russia. There's nothing like it in China. It's, they don't like me. I believe I'm the greatest danger to the tyranny has been unleashed, but there is. At least they must think so.
Evidently. Well, I really appreciate you talking with us. You answered some questions that I've had for quite some time.
Okay, I would have to. I hope you realize that because I point out certain things, I don't hate other people.
I don't think you're hating other people. You can't allow, but you aren't allowed visitors. Does that mean you're not allowed ministers?
There was a minister who tried to visit at Tarindra and he was in the night.
Okay.
This program is brought to you by Scriptures for America, and it's available on either Beta or VHS. So write Scriptures for America, Post Office Box 766, La Porte, Colorado, 80535.